This is Daniel Abraham, author of The Dragon's Path, and you are listening to the SF Signal Podcast.
This is the SF Signal Podcast, as powered by the Functional Nerds. My name's Patrick Hester. I'm an author, a blogger, and an all-around functional nerd. And this is episode 46, which is an interview episode. I had a chance to sit down with Daniel Abraham, who is author of The Dragon's Path, a new book out from Orbit. I did that. So you got that coming up here in a minute. But I want to ask you, did you watch Doctor Who? Were you confused? Like really, really confused? I was so confused. Oh, well. If you have any comments, leave them on the voicemail line, 720-277-9082. Or you can jump on sfsignal.com, click on one of our posts, and use the little Google Flash widget, and Google will call you. I'm just curious if you watch Doctor Who. If you didn't watch Doctor Who, that's fine too. But let's talk about Daniel Abraham. Had a real good interview with him. So rather than natter on, let's get to that interview. Say hello, Daniel. And tonight for the SF Signal Podcast, I am joined by an author who has been nominated a couple times now for Nebula Award, Hugo Awards, and the World Fantasy Award. I don't know if you've won them yet, though. Have you, Daniel? Have you won any of these?
No, I have now officially lost every major award in the field. I'm pretty good with that.
But yeah, that's good, though. I mean, you're still getting nominated, my goodness.
No, it's very flattering. It's very it's been really pleasant losing those. I had a very good time losing every one of them, and I hope to lose some more later.
Now, do you ever worry that some of your pseudonyms are going to get nominated, and then you're going to have this kind of split personality thing going on where one name is mad at the other name because they won something and they didn't, and so on and so forth?
You know, all of my pseudonyms are pretty calm about that particular thing. If one of them like gets an HBO show or gets big enough that everybody else then has to say, you know, somebody writing as the pseudonym, you know, Emmeline Hanover writing as Daniel Abraham. Yeah, then there might be some crosstalk, but until then, I think we're fine.
So, the question I think is on everybody's mind who's listening to this is, why do folks in Albuquerque poo-poo Little Anita's Mexican food?
No idea.
I love that
I like
place.
It fine.
I love
it's a
that
good
place.
Joint. It's a fine joint.
We had two of them up here in Denver. Now we only have the one, and it's just a
really?
Little hole in the wall. It's almost standing room only, and it's packed every time I go in there.
No, it's actually not a little hole in the wall down here. It's got a nice little place by downtown, down by Old Town, in fact, kind of in the tourist district. It's a fine joint.
I love it.
I've got nothing against it at all. I have nothing bad to say about Little Anita.
Red chili for the win.
I'm kind of a green man myself.
Ugh. And here I thought we were becoming friends. Dang.
You know, it was close.
It was close. So you've written quite a bit. You've got the Long Price Quartet. You've
yep.
got a lot of short fiction. You've got a
yep.
couple things under other names. And you have this new thing called The Dagger and the Coin coming out.
Yes. Yeah,
so
the new fantasy.
Where do we start?
Oh, I don't know. Let me do a quick rundown of what we've got.
Okay.
Let me just kind of give you my
Tell our listeners, who's Daniel Abraham, and what do you have? What are you doing?
Well, I'm right now I've got, I think, 3.5 careers. Right now I'm doing 3.5 things.
How many of them do you get paid for?
No, I get paid for these.
Oh, well, then you're ahead of the game.
If I'm not getting paid for them, then it's not a career. That's just something I do for fun.
Ah, gotcha.
And it's a terrible thing. I'll get to that in a second. Daniel Abraham writes epic fantasy and short stories.
Okay.
He wrote The Long Price Quartet, and he's working on The Dagger and the Coin, which is either 3 or 5 books. We're kind of negotiating on exactly what architecture we're using for the end of the story. And we'll figure that out. There's no wrong answer to it. And then Emmeline Hanover is who I am when I'm writing urban fantasy,
mm-hmm.
which is the books with the girl with the tramp stamp tattoo and the leather pants.
Yep.
Those are Emmeline Hanover's books.
Okay.
I'm half of James S.A. Corey, who's writing the Expanse series. That's a space opera. And I'm writing that with a guy named Ty Frank, who's a friend of mine. He's the Corey half. I'm the James half.
Now here's my question about that. I mean, I've known lots of authors to collaborate on books before, and they don't necessarily create a pseudonym for that. You know, they both get credit on the cover. Why did you guys go for the pseudonym?
Ty is relatively new to publishing and doesn't know not to take my advice. And I have this thing about pseudonyms. I think that part of the way that you succeed as an author and kind of as an artist when you're writing stuff is you meet people's expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the tools you use to do that is the name of the guy who wrote it. There's a story I always retell. I was at WorldCon, 8-9 years ago. I don't know, a long time ago. And Walter Mosley was there. You know Walter Mosley?
Not off the top of my head.
He's the guy who wrote Devil in a Blue Dress,
okay,
the Denzel Washington movie. You remember, mm-hmm, that one?
Yes.
So Walter Mosley was there, and he was there because he's written a bunch of science fiction stuff. And he was telling a story about being in a bookstore and seeing one of his science fiction books in mystery and, you know, picking it out and taking it to the information desk and saying, this is misshelved. It's in mystery and it should be in science fiction. It's a science fiction book. And the guy at the information desk turned to him and said, oh, no, that's by Walter Mosley. He writes mystery. And Walter Mosley said, I'm Walter Mosley. And he could see on the guy's forehead the idea, the thought. You could read it. It said, and you write mystery. Right? And Daniel Abraham is a name I want, that is, I think, and I want to have associated with a particular kind of book. That's why I have MLN Hanover for the different kind of book. It's the thing is, you know, you ever do the thing where you kind of forget that you ordered iced tea and you think you ordered Pepsi and you take a drink and you think, oh my God,
yes,
that is the worst Pepsi ever.
Yes, that happened to me at a Chinese food restaurant in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, and it's just that cognitive dissonance thing. It doesn't matter how good I am writing urban fantasy. If you're kind of primed by the name for epic fantasy, it's going to suck. The best urban fantasy in the world is still pretty lousy epic fantasy.
You know,
does that make sense?
It does, but this is something that has always kind of bothered me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess in my head, I sometimes I just don't get it. It's like you're saying, you know, my gosh, I'm Leonard Nimoy, and you're only ever going to think of me as being Spock. And so, you know, I want to do other things, and the only way I can do them is to do them under different names. Does that make sense?
Well, it does, but I will give you 2 points on kind of how I think about it. And I know that how my kind of my take on pseudonyms is idiosyncratic. I know that.
But it's not against the mainstream thought on it. I mean, you know, we talked to Christine Catherine Rush not too long ago,
mm-hmm,
and she basically had the same thing. She's like, you know, if you read a Christine Catherine Rush book, you're getting science fiction. If you read, and she started listing off these other pseudonyms that she writes under, you know, this one, you're going to get romance. This one, mm-hmm, you're going to get mystery. This one, you're going to get, and so on and so forth. So it's like creating a brand.
Yeah, it's a lot like creating a brand. And let me give you the counterexample. One of my closest friends and the guy who I have probably learned the most from and for whom I have probably the most respect in the field is Walter John Williams.
Okay.
He's an amazing writer. He has written in just about every fantasy and science fiction subgenre you can think of. He did kind of New Weird before New Weird was around. He did cyberpunk. He's done this kind of high literary murder mystery with science fiction overtones. He's done high space opera. He's done everything. He's done everything. He's done post-singularity. He's done all of it. And what the booksellers say, what the booksellers say is nobody knows what a Walter John Williams book is. They don't know what it is.
Okay.
So when you go in and you have a new Walter John Williams book in, and you're in the mood for a space opera, you don't know if that is one. You know if it's David Weber, you know what it is. And all of this is it's just making it easy. All that the name does to if you believe what me and Chris Rush say is that if we tell you with the name right up front there, you don't have to think about it anymore. You know.
Right.
And I, you know, I'm also one of those folks who doesn't think, you know, I think that if the thing that makes the book good is the name of the author, it's already not a good book.
Sure. Yeah. I guess it's like, just for me, you know, you like an author.
Mm-hmm.
I wish that if you liked the author, let me put it that way. I wish that if you liked the author, you would be able to break through that barrier and like whatever they wrote.
Well, and I think you have that option. I mean, you will notice that my pseudonyms are a deep, dark secret.
Mm-hmm.
If you like me enough to Google me, if you like me enough to do those keystrokes, you're going to find everything I write.
Right.
I'm not hiding anything.
Right. No, I mean, it's right there on your website.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a pull-down menu. And when I do mysteries, if I ever do romance, if, you know, anything else that I'm doing, there's going to be another entry on that pull-down menu.
Gotcha. Okay. So where were we before we kind of got off on this tangent?
Well, before we get that, we were talking about what I was doing. So those are the things that I'm writing that are mine.
Okay.
The Daniel Abraham epic fantasies, the Emmeline Hanover urban fantasies, the half of the science fiction stuff with Ty. And I'm also translating Game of Thrones into comic book scripts for Bantam.
Oh, really?
Yes, I am.
Wow, that'll be very cool. Now, who's going to publish the comics? Is Bantam going to do it, or are they going to go through like DC or Dynamite or somebody?
Dynamite's doing the individual issues. I'm not sure how they're packaging the graphic novel yet, because they're, you know, every so often they grab a bunch and they concatenate them and they put them out in a really spiffy little package. But I don't know if that's going through Dynamite 2 or if that's just going through Bantam. But Dynamite's the one who's taking care of the individual issues.
And
Dynamite's great.
They are. I love them.
Yeah, I have a very fond spot in my heart for the guys at Dynamite.
Are they? Are those already out on shelves, or are they coming soon? Or?
Nope. No, those are coming soon. I think we're aiming to have them out around. I don't know if they're going to be out by the time the Game of Thrones starts on HBO, but kind of in that time frame.
Sure.
Is what I think we're aiming for.
That's going to be kind of cool. You know, I've been disappointed with the Wheel of Time comics because they've been kind of languishing.
I confess I haven't played with them.
Someone had them. The company that had them released a couple episodes, kind of went under. Someone else picked them up.
Did the DeBells have that?
Who?
The DeBells.
The brothers, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
Yeah, okay.
But no, that's cool. Now, what other? I mean, is that you? It's very hard to break into comic books,
mm-hmm.
And you know anybody who works in comic books will tell you that. Now you've got your foot in the door. Are you looking at expanding into more comics?
I'm doing this as part of a probably quixotic attempt to pitch an idea of my own. Yeah, I have this. I have a story I really want to tell. That won't work as prose.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to have enough of a backlist and a little CV and comics to be able to say, hi, I'm this guy. Here's what I've done. I can do this. Let me tell you this story. And I'm doing that so far by writing George's Coattails. That's my master plan. I'm getting on George's Coattails, and I'm just hanging on.
Now, Dynamite is an awesome little house. They've got a lot of media tie-ins, don't they? They've got the Green Hornet. They've got Die Hard. They've got. Do they have Farscape?
Do they?
I know they have Red Sonja.
I think they do. The guy who we're working with for the art on Game of Thrones was doing some Farscape stuff.
Okay, Zorro, Buck Rogers. I mean, there's all kinds of different things there. So that's a nice little house. You think you're going to be able to kind of move a little bit further there, or you want to go to one of the big houses like DC or Marvel? Or
I need to go someplace where they'll let me do what I want. So I'm expecting
so Dynamite
that's a
it
small
is.
House. it's a gorgeous story.
Okay.
But it's not something that's going to work well with somebody else's continuity.
Gotcha. Well, that's awesome. I hope you manage to do that.
It would be fun. It won't happen this year. It won't happen next, but someday.
So if you're doing the George R. R. Martin stuff, is there any talks about, you know, maybe trying to take some of your works and turn them into comics, like the long print?
I don't know how you do the long price as a comic book. I can't imagine that.
They can do some pretty cool things.
But they can, and they the comic books are a complete and mature art form at this point, I think. But there are some things in the Long Price Quartet that I think you'd have to lose if you translated them into a visual medium.
Gotcha. Okay.
The poses, all of the kind of that ancillary language in that one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you draw that without looking kind of silly.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the novels that you've worked on. So the first series was The Long Price Quartet, and that was from Tor?
That was from Tor. Actually, Orbit picked up the UK rights on that one. So Tor was doing the US publication, and Orbit was doing the UK.
Okay. And so that was how many issues? Or see, now you got me stuck in comic book mode.
That was four books. The first of them was A Shadow in Summer, then A Betrayal in Winter, then An Autumn War, and finally The Price of Spring.
And that got a lot of buzz. A lot of people.
That got a lot of critical attention.
Mm-hmm.
It got some tremendously nice reviews. I'm very pleased with how it came out. I you know, it's one of those things where I went into the project kind of wanting to learn how to write a book and thinking, you know, if I can do enough of these, I'll have the practice to do it right. And I think by the end of it, I kind of knew what I was doing more.
Did you always intend it to be four?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I intended it to be four, and I intended it to be more or less that four. Because the idea, the structure that I had going into that was, I was thinking about my grandmother. My grandma died last year, and
I'm sorry.
She, you know, she was born in the teens. She was born like right at the end of World War I.
Wow.
So she saw the Great Depression. She saw the Second World War. She saw the Cold War. She saw the 60s. She went from a world where the telegraph was really cutting edge to iPhones.
Hmm.
And if that's not an epic, I don't know what is. So I was looking for a story that I could tell that would kind of take somebody through a whole life with all the changes that come from it. And so I did The Long Price, where I have the first book has the protagonists kind of in their late teens and early 20s, and then when they're a little bit older, and then when they're a little bit older, and ends up with them as old men who've lived a full life. That was what I had wanted to do, and that's what I and now that it's done, it's done. I'm never going back to that one. That story is finished.
Okay, and so you kind of used that a little bit to help yourself grow as an author.
Yeah, well, by the time I started those, I had published and written enough short stories that I kind of understood what a short story looks like. And I had come to the conclusion that the only way I was going to figure out what a novel looked like was to write a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I got lucky because the guys at Tor bought all four of them.
Wow.
So I got to work with Jim Frankel, who is a man with an odd reputation in the industry, but I'll tell you what, he's a great editor. On a line by line basis, I've never worked with anybody better than him.
Hmm.
And he was very good about taking the text and arguing with me and hearing me when I pushed back and working the text. That's not something that people have a lot of time to do anymore. And I am grateful to him for the time and the attention he spent on that.
Wow. Well, that sounds like it was a very good experience with a collaborative editor.
Yeah, no, it was a wonderful thing to have, especially when I was kind of getting my feet and kind of figuring out how to do this. He's been doing it for a long time. He knew a lot of things, and he was right about a lot of things that he thought I was doing wrong. I mean, he called me on stuff that he was right to call me on, and he called me on stuff he was wrong about, too. And we talked about it, and he was able to hear that. So I got nothing bad to say about him.
So your grandmother was inspiration for those first four books. What about the Dagger and the Coin series?
Ah.
Let me guess. Little Anita's Green Chili.
Yes, absolutely. I had Little Anita's Green Chili. I started hallucinating. And no. Okay. So there are kind of two things that were feeding into the Dagger and the Coin. And the first one was Babylon 5.
Oh,
which
nice.
Is Babylon 5 is one of my favorite shows ever because it's one of the ugliest success stories I've seen in television. You know, it's got some of the worst acting recorded. Its flaws are many and varied, and it's a success.
Are you aware of the Babylon 5 podcast?
No.
There is a Babylon 5 podcast. It's through Farpoint Media. And it has actually run longer than the series itself because it's still on. And they still talk about it. I mean, they've gone into the Crusade. They've gone into the books. It's still going on.
Yeah.
That's that fan base. You know, I loved Babylon 5.
Babylon 5 was real. I mean, and the things that I admired about it were that they really they knew where they were going from the beginning, and you
right.
can see in the beginning that they know the end, and it's solid. And they, you know, they have to change it along the way.
Mm-hmm. Because every season you're getting canceled. Oh my God,
mm-hmm.
we better change it.
And yet, it was solid enough it could take the hits.
Yep.
And it also was absolutely shameless about ripping off everything that was cool.
Hmm.
I mean, to this day, I don't know. I can't remember whether Khazad Dûm or Zaha Dûm, which one of those is Babylon 5 and the other one's Lord of the Rings, right?
Right.
I don't know which one's which.
Zaha
Dûm. They're in the same place.
Right. Zaha Dûm is Babylon 5. Khazad Dûm is Lord of the Rings.
But it's the same place. I mean, and it's there because it's the same place. They named him Bester.
Yep.
Because he's a psychop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of the shamelessness of saying, oh, no, this is my literature. These are the things I'm in conversation with. This is what I'm doing. These are the things I love and I want to play with. And I'm not even going to, you know, take all of the VIN numbers off first. I'm just going to put them right here. And you're going to like it because you like these too. So that was one thing. That was I admired and appreciated Babylon 5. And the other thing is when I was in high school, I read the Belgariad. You read that one when you were a kid?
No.
David Eddings. I have not read them since. I'm not going to read them. I suspect they will not hold up. But when I was 14, I read them till the spines broke.
Coolest thing you ever read, huh?
Oh, my God, they were great. I mean, and I'm sure I would hate them now, but at the time, oh, they were lovely. And so what I wanted to, what I did when I was thinking, okay, I've done my books to learn how to write books. I got that. I'm done with that. What do I want to do next? I want to do what Babylon 5 did. I want to take everything that I think is cool. I want to take all the stories that I enjoy the very most, and I want to make something that reads to me in my 40s. You know, here I am in my 40s. I want to read something that reads to me now the way that David Eddings read to me when I was 14.
Wow.
I want to do something that makes me stay up, the kind of book that would make me stay up till 3 reading. And I may be, you know, I may make that, I may not, but that's the aim. That's what I want.
That sounds awesome.
Well, it's really fun. And it's hard because there's a real push as a writer to be original and to be to show everybody that you're a very clever person, right?
Or you get the comment that this is a good story, but it doesn't do anything new. It doesn't, you know,
right.
Change the genre.
Right. And so we're all supposed to be writing these things that change your soul as soon as you pick them up.
Right.
And what we wind up doing, is writing stuff that's kind of intellectually defensive and pretentious. I will name no names, but I think that's a real danger, at least. And it's a danger that I've struggled with. You know, not to put it out in the world, but to just say this is something that I'm tacking against. This is the wind I'm tacking against. It's actually harder to do something that's really common, really well. Doing something new and different is actually pretty easy. Doing something that's new and different is good is kind of hard.
Right.
But new and different is cheap. Common, familiar, and really good, that's hard. And that's what I'm trying right now.
And that would be The Dragon's Path.
And that's The Dragon's Path.
And what is
Dragon's Path? It's also it bleeds over into the Expanse books, the space opera. The space opera books are also intended to be things that kind of read like, you know, the like Larry Niven read to you when you were 12. It's supposed to be stuff that has that is in conversation with that experience. You see what I said about sounding kind of pretentious? I'm good at that.
It's okay. You know, it's engaging though. How many books are in the Expanse series?
As many as they will let us write.
So that's kind of open-ended. What are you planning with The Dagger and the Coin?
The Dagger and the Coin, right now we're under contract for 3.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an ending that will wrap up the 3rd book. If they will permit me, if things go well, I would like to do 5.
Okay.
So there's the... And, you know, and you can kind of see Babylon 5 here again, right?
Mm-hmm.
5
yeah.
seasons.
5 seasons.
I've got 5 seasons. I would like to do 5 seasons. And it's a story that has a distinct beginning and a distinct ending.
Well, if Orbitz drops you after 4, do you plan to pitch the 5th one to TNT?
I'm perfectly willing to. If they're willing to pay for it.
That's a Babylon 5 joke.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you.
But very few other people are, which is kind of sad.
Yeah, I would need to lose Claudia, though, right?
Oh, that would suck.
See, can't do that.
No.
So.
That show had some of the best quotes ever, I think, by the way.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I still love the battle scene with Delenn, where she comes in and saves Babylon 5. And, you know, the Earth Alliance forces are in front, and, you know, they're like, you have no authorization to be here. You know, you got to get out of here. And she's like, why would I do that? The only Earth captain who ever survived battle with the Minbari is behind me. You're in front of me.
Yeah.
If you value your life, be somewhere else. I mean, come on. That was an awesome moment.
No, anyway. they had some pretty gorgeous moments.
So, you have the novels, you have the short stories. Short stories are all over the place. You've got them in Asimov's, you've got them in collections, mm-hmm. all over the place. So tell everybody, you know, where can they find your stuff? What's your website?
The website, you can reach me at www.danielabraham.com.
Okay.
Or www.mlnhanover.com or www.the-expanse.com. So yeah, I'm pretty easy to find.
Okay.
I think there's a listing on there of where all of the short stories are published. Okay. I've also got a collection out through Subterranean Press.
I love Subterranean.
That has a bunch of the ones I like them very most.
Okay.
And some gorgeous cover art besides. So that was nice.
Do you have ebooks too?
I don't have any ebooks that aren't through one of the publishers. I know that Orbit and Tor have, I think, Orbit and Tor and Simon & Schuster, I think, have all of the novels out in ebook form. I don't have any of my collections out as ebooks as yet, but as soon as I get them in, I'll work on that.
Okay. Do you do any kind of social media? Are you on Twitter or Facebook?
I'm on Facebook. So I've got the blog and I've got Facebook.
Okay.
I am not yet tweeting.
Do you have links from your website to your Facebook page if people want to follow you, or do you just not do that?
You know, I don't think I do, but let me talk to the guys and see if we can't get that up. It would be a good thing to do.
Yeah.
It's not there because it hadn't occurred to me more than anything else.
Okay. And you have not yet joined the Twitter hive mind.
I have not yet joined the Twitter hive mind, though, as I understand, resistance is futile. So
it is. Yeah. I mean, one of the first things I did when it came upon us that we might be, you know, have the chance to interview you is I searched Daniel Abraham Twitter and I couldn't find you. And I was like, oh.
Yeah, okay. All right, fine. I'll do it.
any conventions planned this year? Any appearances or signings or anything like that where folks can go out and meet you in person?
I'm going to be in Albuquerque, I think it's April 5th or 9th. Or it's right early April. I'm going to be at Page One in Albuquerque, and I'm going to be at Poison Pen in Arizona on the 20th.
Okay, no WorldCon or
no, that's the signings. I'll be at WorldCon, and I'll probably be at ReaderCon. I'm still working out the details on that one. I'm looking to go to ReaderCon.
Okay.
And I always go to BubonaCon here in Albuquerque, and I almost always go to Mile High Con up in Denver.
Oh, maybe I'll see you.
It's a nice con. I like that place.
Last year I went to World Fantasy, so I didn't get a chance to go.
I can't go to World Fantasy for a few years because the kids in that sure. age where she actually enjoys Halloween. So mm-hmm. I can't really miss those.
Understood.
Yeah.
Anything else before I call this the end of the podcast? Anything else you want to throw out there for listeners?
I would kind of go on this rant about reading for pleasure. I know that there's a lot of pressure out there to read things because of who they say about you as a person to other folks and make you look smart or educated or, you know, whatever. And the older I get, the more I think that's a bad idea. I think that really life's too short not to read things you love.
Mm. All righty.
So that's kind of that. There's the received wisdom that I always trot out at the end of the conversation.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
There you have it. Thanks to Daniel for coming on the show. I appreciate it. You guys should go check out his books. Thanks to Little Anita's New Mexican Food for some of the hottest red chili around. Thanks to JMS for Babylon 5. Gosh, go figure. Who would have thought that I would get sucked into a Babylon 5 conversation? Anyway, next week we'll have another topic, another great interview. Lots of cool stuff, so please check back. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can do us a couple favors. One, go to iTunes, give us a couple stars, write us a review. Tell your friends about the podcast. Say, hey, you know what? I've been listening to this podcast over on sfsignal.com, and it's pretty good, and you might like it. That always helps. What else? John D. is on Twitter, twitter.com/sfsignal. and he tweets all sorts of good little tidbits. And speaking of tidbits and mind melds and all sorts of other cool science fiction-y stuff, you should check out sfsignal.com if you aren't already. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, the number is 720-277-9082. That's your opportunity to be a part of the podcast. One of these days, I'm going to put together a voicemail show. Ooh. And if you don't want to make that call, just hit sfsignal.com, click on one of our links for the podcast, and there is a Google Flash widget. Just type in your number, and Google will call you, and then you won't have to make that call. If you're looking for me online, hey, I appreciate that. I am all things from my brain. Twitter.com/ATFMB, www.atfmb.com. You can find me there. I rarely ever tweet. I mean, if you started following me on Twitter, you'd barely see a tweet from me, you know, once, twice a minute, tops. I tweet too much. And I occasionally have posts up at SF Signal and at atfmb.com. So, I think that's it for us this week. Don't forget to tune in to Doctor Who on Saturday and Game of Thrones on Sunday. See you next time. I'm out of here. Bye.